Well, you know the political influencer game. You follow someone you like online, you think you're aligned, and then they say something that sounds like war propaganda. You didn't expect it. So now we have a choose your own adventure. Do you A, follow them into the propaganda, or think for yourself? Someone who exposes this quite often is Village Crazy Lady on X. Her real name is Melissa Witt, and she joins me today to discuss this because I think we've all felt this and we are confused about the rhetoric online. And I think that's purposeful. We're not supposed to think for ourselves. So I'm so glad to meet you. Thank you for joining me on Redacted today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes. Yeah. So you have a really authentic voice. Sometimes I see you, even when you get emotional, it still seems logical. And I'm just so enamored by the way that you do that. But also, you are able to point out propaganda, even from people who have gained large followings. So can you tell me how you got started on X and what is your guiding principle?
Yeah. So I started on X in June of 2020. I had no experience on Twitter. I always thought Twitter was dumb. It's so funny. But, you know, COVID happened and it seemed to be, I kept going. This was when you could access Twitter without an account. Right. So I kept finding really the best stuff on lockdowns and stuff like that. I was very COVID dissident from the get-go. And so I finally made an account with the BLM riots because you could follow those. But I never had any kind of real following until about 2023. It was in the middle of the summer and I was all in on Ron DeSantis. I wanted him to be, because of his COVID policies. I really didn't pay attention to foreign policy that much. I was really obsessed with COVID. And so I started doing deep dives on the finances of his competitors. And the first one I did was Tim Scott. And that was the first time I ever had a viral tweet or a thread in which I found that he had been paying just exorbitant amounts of money to a shell LLC for millions and millions and millions of dollars. I think at that point it was like 12 million. He's up to 30 million that he's paid to this LLC that doesn't exist in any way, shape, or form except for on a single registration. But that's besides the point. So that's when I kind of got a following. But then October 7th happened, right? So I had about 6,000, almost 7,000 followers at that point. October 7th happened. And all of a sudden, all of my small government, America First, fear of people turned into these rabid war pigs, and they're just foaming at the mouth. And I was really shocked. Within a week, I was like, "What is going on here? This is nuts." I mean, it was like a state of psychosis, right? And I could not believe how many of the influencers who I was following and who I was kind of looking up to and who had been sharing all of my stuff, all of a sudden, they just, all of the principles that they said that they had, they just threw straight out the window, and they went all in on, forever war and genocide. And so that was very jarring for me because I just went the other way and lost a lot of followers, a lot of support, had, several rounds of campaigns targeted at me to, discredit me and everything I had ever done and whatnot. And I just kind of pushed through. But yeah, when you start out like that and you're just pushing against the current the whole time, right? It is hard to build up a following, and it's very tempting to just say screw it and go along with the crowd because the talking points will get sent to you. It's very easy. You don't have to put any effort into it, and then you can still focus on these other things that you really like, So,
well, no one's ever sent me any talking points to support the war in Gaza. Have people sent you those talking points? I mean, I can see what they are on X, but maybe I'm just not popular enough to get them.
No, but if you are in a group chat with political operatives, you absolutely will get these talking points. And I know that because I know people who are in them who they have jobs, they have incomes, they don't post this stuff, but they are offered incentives to post this stuff. They are sent actual talking points. I have seen the emails with points they should hit on, how much they'll get paid for each one of their posts, for the interactions, for the engagement that comes with it. And as we can see, a lot of people took the money. A lot of
Yeah.
them did, you know. What?
Yeah, I found it very confusing at this point too, because a lot of my research was around ending the war in Ukraine, the lies of Ukraine as the good guy. And so influencers who actually understood that Ukraine is a gangster company, country, all of a sudden didn't understand the politics of Israel. And so, I think it's hard for us to continue because of the momentum of social media to continue to think for ourselves. It can be so easy to just lock in, liked that person for this and this, so I'll go with them. And so you see that happening, right? You must have seen this with your following.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I did see that. And then at the same time, there were a ton of people. I was getting messages, private messages every single day, DMs. You know, I used to not get them. When I first started, I would maybe get one or two a week. And I started getting them almost every day from conservatives who were like, "Thank you for speaking up," because there's no one in our sphere talking like this. And then, you know, as my following got bigger and bigger, and I had a handful of other viral threads. I did one on Letitia James when Trump was on trial that went mega viral. Then I had another one on Matt Gaetz that went really, really big, also like mega viral. And so I got a big following from other things, but I have to stay focused on Gaza because, for me, it really is the most important thing in the world happening. It impacts everything else in the US. I think everyone will agree now that American politicians, left and right, are completely beholden to the Israeli lobby. And that is half the reason why our entire political system is so constipated, because nothing can get done. And you know, everyone's always prioritizing this, and it gets used against each side, right? In order to make things happen for whatever, you know, the Israel lobby wants. So, yeah, I did experience a lot of hate, and you'll see people go. And what I have actually experienced also is a lot of people who unfollowed me in the beginning, they came back, right? Because there's only so much bombing you can see before your own moral instincts kick in. Right?
Right.
Like they might have gone along with it initially, but there's only so much that before, even it doesn't matter how many influencers there are. You see it and you know it's wrong. You know it's morally, it's just wrong, right? And
Yes.
so yeah, they come back.
We're going to take a break and tell you about our sponsor at Rumble Wallet. How much control do you have over your money? Well, of course, technology has changed every part of our lives, and now it's changing the way our money moves too. Crypto is no longer just a niche idea. It is a practical way for people to make financial transactions with more flexibility and fewer middlemen. Now, if you've been curious but you don't know where to start, Rumble Wallet is where you need to go. It is a non-custodial wallet, which means you control access to your funds, not a bank or another platform. You can buy Bitcoin, hold a stable coin tied to the US dollar, or even own Tether Gold, which is backed by real gold, all in one place. Getting started with our partner MoonPay is super easy. You can fund your wallet with your credit card, bank account, or debit card. You can even use Rumble Wallet to tip your favorite creators like Redacted or other Rumble creators. That would be happily accepted. And for a limited time, you can download Rumble Wallet and use the promo code REDACTED10 to claim $10 in US stablecoin when you sign up. So visit wallet.rumble.com/redacted. Again, the code is REDACTED10 to claim your $10 while this limited time offer lasts. Take control of your money. Get started with Rumble Wallet today. Terms and conditions apply. See the description below or visit rumble.com/promo official rules for more details. I'd also like to tell you about American Financing. In today's uncertain economy, American Financing is helping families find a way out of the high interest debt trap. Of course, in the doldrums of summer, the economic clouds are not clearing for most middle class families. Between persistent inflation and the cost of daily life, of course, we're all feeling the pressure. You've worked hard for your home and probably have more equity than you realize, yet the summer surge is forcing many to rely on credit cards. This is an exhausting cycle. But American Financing understands that 2026 requires a real strategy and help you stop digging yourself into debt and instead build yourself into wealth. That's why their salary-based mortgage consultants can help you. They have mortgage rates in the fives. Their customers are saving an average of $800 a month by wiping out high-interest debt. That's money that stays in your pocket to fight back against rising costs. No upfront fees, no pressure. And if you start today, you can delay two mortgage payments. So call them and see how at 866-890-8434 or go to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. One more time, that's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. And so there's this charade of serving the American people. Now, if you read, there's decades of the Israel lobby co-opting our politicians. Bill Clinton was one of them. I think they even called Bill Clinton's administration the lawyers for Israel. You know, we can see how Ronald Reagan, it's just, you can just keep peeling this back. But at least there used to be this charade that we're doing something for the American people. Now those blinders are off, and we can see the Trump administration doing the direct bidding of Israel. We can see, you know, and so what do you think will become of this, that they're not even pretending anymore? They're just making an increasingly clear that they do not serve the American people, and they will continue to thieve from our efforts in order to support these wars. And, you know, I see a lot of people with, like, oh, this is going to break, this is going to crack. And I just don't share that enthusiasm. I'm just constantly sad and disillusioned by it.
Yeah, you know, American support for Israel up until 1989 was rooted in anti-communism, right? So that's where the whole idea that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East comes from, because, you know, most of the Arab states were either aligned, well, Egypt definitely aligned with the Soviets, and that kind of, but the Arabs being aligned with the Soviets is what was sold to the American people, and then the Jews were the anti-communists. So, and that made,
I mean, if
more
I could just
sense, right?
Insert this, Israelis don't even own their own water if it falls in a bucket in their own backyard. So how can this be the bastion of freedom?
It's really nuts, because, you know, the entire kibbutz system is actually like small scale Marxism. So it's like Americans were just sold this whole crock, right? And but they could at least justify it then, right? And so then we have this kind of lull in why are we still supporting them, right? And it kind of goes through until 9/11, right? And then what do you have happen? You have 9/11, and now we have the mass problem of Islamic terrorism. And who's right there? They're our friends. They're helping us fight these terrorists, right? And so that worked for a little while too. And then when that starts to kind of wane, we see this kind of explosion of Christian Zionist organizations. And that is when, it's 2006 is when Pastor Hagee's organization, the Christians United for Israel, is reincorporated in the state of Texas. But it goes out and starts using the Crusade for Christ, Campus Crusade for Christ network that had been built in the 70s, but they co-opted it in 2013. But there's a handful of other organizations that you've probably never even heard of, like the Philos Project. And they're these huge, very, very well-funded Christian Zionist organizations. And that is when, you know, it's around 2010-ish up till now. Now our support is rooted in this quasi Christian theology that almost no Christian can actually even define for you. Very few can actually tell you what premillennial premillennial dispensationalism is. They're just told, well, we got to bless Israel, and this is the way it's always been. And, you know, that's one thing I've been trying to focus on, is that this is not the way it's always been. American support was not always rooted in this idea of Christian Zionism. Christian Zionism is actually a bit of a fringe ideology within Christianity. You know, Christians United for Israel will tell you that there's 10 million members. All you have to do to be a member is you just put your email in and say you want some information. Boom, you're accounted in their registry. So those numbers are overinflated. Most Christians don't actually know what it is that they're supporting. It's just that this is something we've always done. Everybody just, we just support Israel. That's what we do. And I think now what's happening is especially with just the long-term strain of this war, and now with the Iran war, and now with Trump's just kind of slobbering subservience to them, and like his willing to do the bidding of the Israeli lobby no matter what, people are waking up and they're saying, what in the world? And it doesn't matter where you go, because I was on Facebook earlier. I have a burner Facebook account, and I like to go and look at people's I like to look at like the pro-Israel posts and then the comments underneath, and same for Palestine and whatnot. And I'm just amazed. I'm always like so excited when things reach the boomers on Facebook. And you've got boomers on Facebook, I mean, just going out and saying, no, this is wrong. Why are we doing this? Why, you know, so I am hopeful for change. Absolutely.
Yeah. I did a piece recently about Cyrus Schofield and the dispensationalism history. And most people don't realize it was funded by Wall Street. And so they think it's a grassroots movement that came out of the doom boom of the late 1800s, post-Civil War, you know, this end of the world type thing. But really, it was not organic. It's not a grassroots movement at all. It was purposely funded by what was called the Lottos Club in New York City, Wall Street, early Zionists. So, you know, you can just keep peeling the onion, and it does seem like people want that. They want historical context, because so many of us are like, how the hell did we get here? What? How is this so extreme? Right. So do you? Yeah, go ahead.
No, so I've been doing a series on the NAR, which is the New Apostolic Reformation, which is these are the people who are really, really pushing a lot of this really extreme. That's what Paula White belongs to. She's NAR, even though it's this decentralized, quote unquote, movement. But so I went back, I went through Schofield, all the way up into now. I am in the 30s, and I'm talking about Frank Norris, who is the guy who ends up influencing. This is who Jerry Falwell credits as his kind of like mentor, or who he aspired to be. And J. Frank Norris actually rejected dispensationalism, which is interesting, but he is the man who convinced Truman to recognize Israel. Like, he's credited with that. And he's also the man who was able to capitalize on radio. He had the largest, he was able to reach 20 million people. He was the first pastor of a mega church in Dallas, Texas. You've probably never even heard of him. And this man was unbelievably influential. Yeah, the dispensationalism, it does get lost a little bit until the 67 war. And when the 67 war happens, and when the Israelis take over the all of Jerusalem, it's really wild, because it's like everything snaps. And you have people who had been even sympathetic to Palestinians up to that point. Even Billy Graham wasn't this like hardcore pro-Israel person. And then, he was pro-Israel, but he wasn't out like these pastors are now by any means. And then what happens is that in the 67 war, they read into the recapturing of Jerusalem as this is a sign Jesus is coming now. And you see this mass explosion of like movies and books, series that come out in the 70s, 80s, and 90s that have really laid the groundwork for all of this today. And yeah, it's none of it is very organic, but it's also, there's a fusion of pop culture that went along with a lot of it that really helped to propel it into, and this is why I do believe that like your boomers are just such hardcore. They're the hardest ones to reach because they were subjected to this weapons grade propaganda about in the post 67 world, just about this is a sign like Jesus is going to come back and whatnot. So yeah, your religious ones, but that was never fused into American policy until the about 2005, 2006 is when you actually see like sitting congressmen talking about, we got to bless Israel to be blessed. That was never like nobody ever had to give that reason prior. It was like, oh, well, they're our partners in anti-communism. But sorry, I'm talking a lot.
No, it's fine because, this is something that I constantly want to just not miss because we got so far. I think, I was very liberal until COVID, until the war in Russia, and then the gender ideology turned me on a hard left away from the Democrats. And I was inspired by the revival of, conservatism. And I thought, well, that's kind of great. This religion means a lot to a lot of people. It's sort of a return to a family-based culture. I think that it was such a wasted movement because the Trump administration has capitalized on it in order to start new wars. And they are doing it under the guise of religion. So it is important, even though we are supposed to be a secular country, with freedom of religion, this religious co-opting is driving our policy. And at the end of the day, it's a theft from us. Every one of us who files taxes is having to pay for a war we don't support. So again, it's good to just sort of talk about these sort of cultural boosts so we don't miss them ever again.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. And it's important to understand when we talk about New Apostolic Reformation, the NAR movement, that Paula White was installed. She was absolutely installed. I can't prove it, but I do think that ANAR is some form of probably like the CIA. Evangelicalism in general has been used by the CIA to infiltrate Latin American countries. They were very involved in that in the 1970s, to the point where they actually came out and said, "Well, we won't do that again unless, we won't ask them, but if they come to us," that was when George Bush was the head of the CIA. That became his official policy. "We won't that ask them, but if they come to us, then, we're willing to work with them to infiltrate these countries and whatnot." So they have used evangelicalism for a long time in this aspect, and you'll see these kind of radical sects break off. And that's definitely the case with NAR. And the other problem with that is they believe in these prophets and apostles who can just read parts into the Bible. They're told, like, if you are a prophet, you have the gift, the Lord will come to you, and you can add, you can make addendums to the Bible itself, which is just kind of, I mean, if you grow up Methodist like I did, that's just straight heresy. Like, what in the world is going on here? But people like Paula White, she does believe that she can. There's a handful of others. Lance Wallnau is a big one. But this is the woman whispering into Trump's ear, and she's adding parts of the Bible. She thinks she can write additional appendages to the Bible, or she has a special interpretation of what the Bible is actually saying, right? And this is the president of the United States. This is his faith counselor. She has an office in the West Wing. It's
What
nuts.
do you make of that? Because I think there's a lot of demographic shift that shows that people become more religious as they get older. And Trump is an elderly man. Now, he was never religious before. He didn't have a strong religious platform. Do you think, let's just surmise, because sometimes I teeter between, yeah, he just. What elderly people do is they cling to something that is comforting because their life is ending. Or do you think it's blackmail that would install these people? This is something we are constantly teetering on. Like, how can this explain that you're
Right.
doing the opposite of what you promised? What do you think?
So initially, Paula White was installed by Johnny Moore, who is from Liberty University, which, I mean, that's a whole rabbit hole in and of itself. But what happened was the Protestants, the evangelicals were very anti-Trump in 2016, right? And that was a problem for him once it became clear he was going to win the nomination. They all came out, and the big funders, the Wilks brothers, who were the at that time the biggest funders, they backed Ted Cruz, explicitly said they would not be giving any money to Trump. The Israeli lobby at that time, the Adelsons, were not, they did not want Trump. They had wanted Rubio. And so he had a problem. And what happens is that he gets approached by Johnny Moore, who at that time was running the Kairos company that he had just started. It's a PR firm. And that's where Andrew Colvett, that was, he was his a right-hand man at that time. They bring Paula White in, and Trump kind of knew Paula White a little bit because she was a televangelist. And that's how she gets installed, right? So they come to him and they say, "Well, you have a problem with the evangelicals. We can help." He says, "I know this lady, Paula White." So Johnny Moore brings all of the evangelicals through his connections, through a man named David Lane, who is probably the most important evangelical political operative in the country. You've never heard of him. There's a white supremacist named David Lane. It's not the same person. This guy is very much behind the scenes. But they have a private meeting at Trump Towers in June, the third week of June of 2016, where the week prior, David Lane had been quoted as saying, "No one is with him. We are not with him. No one knows who this lady Paula White is." Lane is brought in for a private meeting. The very next week, he says, "All right, we're all on board. Everything's good." And then David Lane received a $15 million donation to the organization that he runs a month later, private donation, which he runs a church, a faith-based organization. So we don't get to see the 990s. So we have no idea where this money came from, but that's how he got installed. That's how she got installed, but that's how this movement gets installed. And yeah, it starts to get really, really radical around the 2020 election, right? So that's actually where I think Trump really got radicalized religiously, was he felt that the election was stolen. He couldn't prove it. And you had all of these NAR guys, there's a handful of them. They're the ones who planned the January 6th protest, but they are literally saying Trump is ordained. They're telling him, "You were ordained by God. This is your battle, essentially. And if you win, you will be like David, essentially." And he starts to get this God-like complex, and it starts to get really, really more and more radical as he is, starts to face kind of the weaponization of the DOJ under the Biden administration, right? And so I actually think that that's probably the thing that fed in the most to it is that he is more and more isolated. People after January 6th, he's no longer president and whatnot. But these people, they all stick around him, and they're all very loyal to him, to their credit. We can probably have a whole conversation on that, but. So I actually think it's a combination of loyalty, of just being old and senile, and then also the kind of brainwashing, the bravado that they're told. He thinks he's Cyrus, he's David, he's whatever biblical character, that they whisper into his ear, and they really, really feed into his kind of megalomaniac personality,
Right. I'm sure the weaponization of the DOJ was very scary. And so it feeds into this, hero's journey. Like you were in the belly of the whale, you've come out. This is what you are meant to do because of it. And so there's no rational thought, of like, well, people will die. This is not what you promised. And so you don't buy that there's some kind of blackmail going on. You've never, I mean, I've looked for that as well. If you read the Epstein files, all you see is allegations. They're not complete by any means, but I'm not looking away from them. I want to see what was done about these allegations. We never get that. What do you think?
Well, I do think that at a certain point, yeah, the bravado, the Trump whispering or whatnot, it doesn't explain many of the things that he has done now, because he's essentially lit his entire legacy on fire. He was the peace president, right? He was the guy, he was, the economic president. I still remember the TikToks, the people, they were so excited that we're finally going to have some more money in their pockets, right? And what do you know? So it doesn't, that doesn't make any sense. If we're talking about someone with a, a narcissistic personality disorder, they don't do the things that he's been doing, right? They go along with the crowd. They do the popular things, which, consequently, for him, it was going to work out just great. That was what he was saying he was going to do. It was going to go along with everything. And then he turned around and just did this total 180. So you do have to wonder, is there blackmail? Are they threatening him? Right? I mean, I don't buy the official narrative about what happened at Butler. You'll never convince me that this kid who has no history of radicalization or mental health issues just woke up one day and was somehow able to position himself just perfectly on top of a roof and fire off five shots at the, Republican nominee for president. That no, I don't. So is he scared? He's had more gunmen get close to him than any president that I know of, because even with Reagan, obviously he was shot, but after that, no one ever even got close. It's very, and he was a very controversial president. Every president we've had since has been very controversial and had really rabid haters on whatever side. And no one gets that close, and yet now we're on to the point where now people are saying, is he staging these? Right? Is he involved? Are they? They're fake. They're, what's going on here? So, I'm of the opinion sometimes I think that it actually is a threat from, the powers that be that want this war. But no, I absolutely do agree with you. There's something else going on here. We just don't know what, and you can't prove it. And so everybody says, it's a good thing I'm the village crazy lady, so I can just say whatever I want to, right? Because I just lean into it, but.
Well, so one of the things that really bothers me in terms of reactions to the questions that we ask is when people say, "Oh, you just have Trump derangement syndrome." And I find that it rings of sexism to me. Maybe that's just the way it lands on me. Like, run along, little hysterical lady. You don't really understand, the politics you're talking about. That really bothers me more than anything else. I don't care if you call me a Putin lover or an anti-Semite or anything else, but like, you're just hysterical and you don't understand. Really gets under my skin more than anything else. Because I was hopeful for the Trump administration. I did have Trump derangement syndrome during the first term, but I was hopeful during this one. And so I just wonder if there's a value in saying, I'm going to ask every question and I don't care if it seems crazy. Because if we can do that, we will get in, because a lot of times the truth is in fact crazy.
Right. Yeah. No, anytime that I get a lot of, repeal the 19th, right, amendment all the time, I just, those people are immediately dismissed because they don't have anything to offer. Anyone who talks like that has nothing to offer to the conversation. Who want to talk about, hysterical women or whatnot. Most of the time, if I see it, it's just the hide and block because I know that you're not actually going to be able to bring anything here. You don't have anything of value to add here. But no, I think it is important to just kind of throw it out there. Number one, it does lend to just authenticity as a human being. There's so much AI on that. So much AI created content and whatnot, but it's okay. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to ask crazy questions, It is okay to make assertions based upon what you know to be true and real in life, right? You know that it's not normal that this many gunmen have come around Donald Trump, have been able to get access within a couple hundred yards. That's not normal. We know it's not normal. So yeah, you actually do have to answer the questions about why. I'm allowed to ask questions about why this was able to happen because we've already established that there's an abnormality in what's going on here. And I think you can just apply that to everything else you want to ask. And who cares if they call you crazy? If that's the first and only thing they have to say, well, then they just don't have anything of value to add anyways. And vamoose, you know?
That reminds me, this repeal of the 19th. I've seen some sort of people now speaking at Turning Points organizations that are sort of trad wives. You know, we believe in one vote per family. That feels like a new divisive project, like a chaos, like purposeful, because why would we do that? You know, what's the point of that? And so I constantly now see these movements as just a distraction. I don't think anyone really means it. I think it's just, you know, I see like blue haireds yelling about it, like they want us to have kids. Can you believe it? And do you think that will continue to work?
I think that the for right now, I do think that the culture wars have started to kind of run their course, because again, anytime people can't afford groceries, they don't actually give a shit. About your, you know, your frivolous little things. But that goes back. I like to call it kind of like my $1 million theory. You know, they say, oh, repeal the 19th. I'm like, that's the equivalent of me saying, well, everyone should just win the lottery, right? If everyone just had $1 million, everybody's problems would go away. That's not going to happen the same way as you don't even know anything about. If you actually think that could happen, that you could repeal the 19th Amendment, you don't know anything about voter turnout and the fact that you need 2/3 of the state's legislatures and the Senate and the Congress, or excuse me, all of the Congress, to repeal a constitutional amendment. And who votes? It's women. It's women are 54% of the electorate. So you'd have to actually get them to vote against their own interests. It's just never going to happen. So to me, people who use things like that, it's because they don't have any real solutions to problems, right? So they like to put this thing up as, well, all of the problems could be solved if we could just do this one thing that's actually never going to happen. And because that's never going to happen, none of their other, you know, frivolous, stupid ideas can ever happen. And then it just, you know, it just becomes this constant kind of convenient scapegoat for everything. And I think people are getting tired of listening to people like that, because they don't, you know, people want change. They want to be able to afford their groceries. They want their elected representatives to be responsive to them, right? Mm-hmm. The one thing I do worry about often is people, and this is already a serious problem in America, is just apathy, right? So much that, you know, nothing ever changes. You switch the Congress, you switch the president, things just get worse and worse, and people just check out.
We want to tell you about Lear Capital, because you may have seen the headlines. Major banks are predicting gold could climb over $6,000 an ounce and silver skyrocketing up to $300. Well, this news is finally catching up to what we've been saying for years, that the value of the dollar is under assault and the demand for precious metals is exploding. But who you trust matters just as much as what you buy. That's why we've been working with Lear Capital for years. They are an education first company. They prioritize customer experience over a quick sale. And because of that, they have thousands of satisfied customers and over $3 billion in transactions that offer something truly unique, which is a 24-hour risk-free purchase guarantee. So you don't pay unless you're completely satisfied. Who does that today? So if you're considering gold and silver, call the best in the business. Give them 10 minutes or they'll even offer you more. If you have more questions, they'll stay on the phone until you're good and satisfied. Call them at 800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. One more time, that's LearRedacted.com. I've seen that with a lot of the coverage that we do around the war, because we do a daily show. Every day, the war advances on a lie, and we're like, that's a lie, that's a lie. And it just gets tiring. Like, I know they're lying. There's nothing I can do about it. So how do we advance the conversation? So we're struggling here on Redacted to make sure we're being productive instead of people just feeling like it's all effed, none of it's real, you can't do anything about it. How do we fight that? Because, yes, Israel destroyed Gaza. It was a Holocaust. Now they're doing it to Lebanon. We're going to have to sit through that too. That is an assault on our psyche, and it's easy to check out. And in fact, it's understandable. So what do we do to fight apathy? This is something I've been circling around a lot as well. And I just pray at night, can you make sure that we are useful? Like, how do we be useful I don't know what to do. So I'm just commiserating with you. You don't have to have the answers to my life.
No. I absolutely. I mean, I think we're all subject to it. I'm very much a human. And the one thing I try to do, especially when I am feeling apathetic, like I'm just feeling like a screw it, is I try to find individual stories in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Iran, to focus on. And sometimes I'll do threads on them. To really bring people back to the fact that these are human beings. These aren't statistics, right? This is a mom, and these were her babies, and this is what she did for a living, you know, and she is a real person, and she could have been your neighbor. These are not some kind of, Lebanon is such a developed, like it's practically a developed country.
Yes.
It's very westernized, very, very westernized. Sometimes I get grief from the other side where they're like, it doesn't matter if they're not westernized. And I'm like, I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to show people that these could be your, like, it's anybody. It could be anybody that you know. That's who we're bombing. Like, that's who they're bombing. That's who they're murdering, you know?
Yes, there's been this idea that, oh, it's just a backwater. They're basically Bedouin camps. They don't have society. Yep. I don't know why that makes any difference.
Right.
I don't
want to see the Bedouins bombed. Yeah. I literally don't care if the women can't, their eyes, that's all you ever see of them. They're human beings, right? And I absolutely advocate for them as well. Obviously, but I think sometimes it's really important because part of the disconnect, part of the apathy is that it's like, well, you know, it's because part of the propaganda that we're sold is that the women are oppressed, right? So I try to share that, no, these women are not oppressed at all. These women are actually, they dress exactly the way that Westerners dress. These are totally, they're sending their babies to school. They're doing, you know, there was this one mother who she survived, but her husband and her baby were killed in a bombing in southern Lebanon a few weeks ago. And I was looking through her Instagram and, you know, she had the baby, like the smash cake for the 1 year old. Like,
oh, yeah.
It was just wrenching to look, and the whole family's just gorgeous, and it's all gone. You know, their whole home, everything that she had was gone, and now this mother is all alone. Yeah. And that was so heartbreaking for me. And it's like, no, I can't stop. Like, no, we have to keep advocating, and we have to keep really holding these elected officials responsible. Every time I see a politician get confronted, when they're giving a speech, like, my heart does soar. I think that these politicians should be confronted every single day of their lives for what they have supported and enabled. Yes. We have had exactly one member of either the Biden or Trump administration resign, Joe Kent, in protest. And I know he protested because it's bad for America. I would genuinely like to see people protest because it's bad for humanity as well, you know? But I'll take what I can get. I'm not trashing Joe Kent at all. But again, it's an absolute indictment of the American political class that we've only had one, right?
Yes.
Know of. There were some State Department employees that did resign under Biden. I do know that. I do want to give them credit. But
yes, early, actually.
Right.
Early on. You're right.
Yeah.
And so what do you make of just switching gears a little bit? Because a lot of the ability to ignore this is sold under rejecting personalities. And so if you can reject Tucker Carlson, you don't have to hear what he's saying because he's gone too far, and they can call him a vicious anti-Semite. And then you don't have to worry about anymore the stories that he wants to highlight. And I feel like that's such a dangerous game. Because they're asking the rest of us who exist in the peripherals to, like, condemn Candace Owens, condemn Tucker Carlson. And that sells you the idea that a personality is the whole narrative. Something David Icke likes to say is, don't follow people, follow ideas. And so, how do you feel playing that game? Because I just don't like it. Like, I don't know Candace Owens personally. I don't have a problem with the questions she asks. It's not for me to, like, follow a personality. It's for me to only follow the ideas.
Right.
So what do we do with that, this sort of personality wars that really, I think, only exist? They don't exist in the grocery store. They exist on X.
Right.
But still, it's useful for a certain power grab.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's very useful to, smear people as, racists, anti-Semites, homophobes, all of the things. But what that really does, the whole entire purpose of it, is really just to kind of keep us in our own camps, right? To keep that partisanship. And partisanship is the greatest tool that the powers that be have, right? The people who actually control society. When I was, digging in on this NAR stuff, I got to prohibition, right? And one thing, I'm actually dropping a thread later on today about this man, Wayne Wheeler, who was the head of the Anti-Saloon League. And, the prohibition movement was actually one of the most successful political movements of all time in America. And the thing about Wayne Wheeler was he was nonpartisan. He did not care. He would work with Democrats or Republicans. And that is how they were able to pass in, I think it was 19 different states, anti-liquor laws in a period of like 10 years. And then they got their amendment to the Constitution passed. From the time Wayne Wheeler starts in 1908, it takes him about 12 years to get an actual amendment to the Constitution passed to ban the sale of liquor, which is just crazy when you really think about it. And how did he do it? Because he worked both sides. He did not care. The only thing he absolutely cared about was, do you support our cause? Everything else was whatever. And if he had a whole policy, if he went in, if both candidates supported, they just stayed out of the race. If one candidate did and one candidate didn't, of course, they backed the candidate who did support prohibition. And the only other entity that we can think of right now that does that is AIPAC. Right?
Yeah.
They don't care. They'll work left, right, or center. They do not get hung up on personality. They do not get hung up on, they said this or they. As long as you say the right thing about Israel, they literally don't care about anything else. And so I'm now at that. That's my approach now. I actually don't care. I don't care what you said about right now. I think that stopping this war machine is the most important thing in America. And it's, I don't care. I work with anybody who that's their goal too, even if I disagree with them on 80 or 90% of other things, right? Because we'll get to that bridge, when we actually have a victory here, we can start talking about those other things. But I think that's the only way we're actually going to make any difference, is to just, get past the team, right? Sometimes one of my conspiracy theories is that professional sports and whatnot, it actually trains us for partisanship, right? So we get on our team and we get just hyper focused on it, and we are so loyal to it. And if there's any threat to our team, then at the end of the day, we'll go against even our own conscience sometimes. So
yeah. I feel like I'm just sharing, maybe you can feel some recognition in this. Like during the Biden years, I was so upset at all the ways I had been lied to by liberals that I went a little too hard on anti-liberalism, and I was mad, like really mad. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like liberals, they're holding court for the peace movement. I don't think their leaders mean it, but I do think people who identify as liberals do. And so I need to learn to, see them as people again. I need to humanize the other side and break, even though I don't really believe in partisan politics in terms of leaders. They're a uniparty. But I think people really do adhere to these labels. And so I went a little too hard in the paint because I felt betrayed. And now I have to widen the lens and be like, actually, we agree on a lot more. They're not trying to, nobody's, the movement to inject our kids with hormones has died down somewhat. We need to be able to talk again. And so that's my mea culpa. How do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you have something like the transgender ideology, which is so divisive and so such a hot topic, right? Because it did feel like they were preying on our kids with these I view as medical experimentations,
Yes.
right? To further the interests of pharmaceutical companies, to pad the pockets. But also, I think there was a kind of a darker, more sinister goal there as well. Whether or not the average Joe Schmo was involved, I don't know, but or I doubt that actually. But so yeah, so that's it is difficult because you do go really, really hard on that, and now. Republicans have some things that I don't know if Republicans I can think of something quite as extreme, I guess, as the trans stuff. But they are in I don't know if they're certainly much more extreme on Israel, that's for sure.
Well, yes, it's freedom of speech that they no longer believe in freedom of
At
speech if it
all,
has to
right?
do with criticism of Israel. Yep, they're like, absolutely lock that person up. That person shouldn't be, you know. Yeah, I don't know how that happened when they were all for
Oh
free
my God.
speech around COVID.
Oh, I know. Now we've got we're going to target your advertisers. If they advertise with you, we're going to try to get your job. I mean, doing all of the things that the left did. They literally were, it's like they were all just sitting there taking notes, right? And
Yeah.
then and now quote unquote becoming canceled for them is, well, you're not, no one's putting you in jail. And they're
Right.
trying to pretend like that was always their definition is, and it's like, well, no one was ever going to jail. That's no, you stood against people being punished for simply expressing their ideas. And someone who was very, very good about always that was Charlie Kirk.
Yes.
He absolutely walked the walk and talked the talk, and he took so much criticism and so much, real kind of hate from both sides for allowing different points of view on his stage. And he is certainly sorely missed on that.
Yeah.
So yeah, going forward, how do we kind of reconcile with each other? I think that we have to just have grace. And if you can't have grace, well then okay, just I always say you don't need to forgive me, just get out of the way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or cast a wide net for questions. You know, I saw a comment recently. Because Clayton did a piece about OJ and, you know, the prosecutors who presumably planted the glove. And someone was like, that was a bridge too far. I'm done with you now. So it's like we asked a question that's a reasonable question. And that's the question you cannot hear. And we're all the worse for it if we jettison people because there was something that they said that they didn't like. So we have to somehow keep engaging, even when there's something you don't want to hear. And so maybe that's the purpose of calling yourself crazy is because crazy ends up being right so often. I mean, literally the CIA funded feminism. That would have sounded crazy to me 10 years ago. I know that now. And so, like, crazy usually is where the truth is, don't you think?
Well, the Village Crazy Lady thing came from I was at a protest to reopen our schools in August of 2020, and there was like five of us out there, right? And but the Raleigh News and Observer came, and the guy there's a guy in a pickup truck, and he rolls down his window. He stops in front of us because we're out in front of the governor's mansion, and he says, "You guys want to open up the schools?" And we said, "Yes." We were all excited, and he goes, "You're like the Village Crazy Ladies out here," and. It was just so, I was like, yeah, I'm the crazy one. I want children to go to school. I'm the nut job, right?
Yeah.
Like, because I think that children are much safer in school, and that the harm being done by these lockdowns is far greater than any harm that was going to be done with COVID, right? And of course we knew that because the governor was allowing private schools to open up, and it was, there was a lot of controversy there. But so yeah, very often it's the crazy ones, or the quote unquote crazy ones. So that was just kind of a play on that, on that thinking. Don't be afraid to be called crazy. It's okay. It's yeah, if you knew all of the things our government has done, it's just nuts. You look into MK Ultra, you look into, the coups, you look into, I mean, our government was running guns into Mexico, giving them to the cartels so they could quote unquote track them. The amount of drugs that are allowed and just certain things that are just allowed to happen in this country. And you know that that's not right. There's got to be some other hand guiding all of it. So I think it's perfectly normal. And sometimes, yeah, you do feel like you're crazy. You absolutely do. I think COVID, if COVID didn't convince you
Also,
that
it doesn't, it the sting goes away
it
eventually
does.
because I
Oh, yeah.
didn't like it. I was beholden to, I wanted a certain reputation, and now I'm all in. It's not that bad to be cool of names because you get to be right. And also, the world is less confusing if you can ask crazier questions.
Oh yeah, definitely. And yeah, I always try to tell people just lean into it. It's okay. And it's okay to be wrong too. That's the other thing. I was wrong the other day on the Graham Platner. They posted a video. Well, I was wrong kind of. But it was the Daily Wire guy who posted a picture. I guess Graham Platner had a Kick account and they were presenting this as this was current. This was a picture of him, like that he took the other day or something like that. And it turned out that it was much older than that. But, I'm like, I've seen Graham Platner without a shirt off many times now, and he's a bit flabby. And this guy's got a six pack. So I don't think it's the same person. I think this is an edited, and it turned out I was wrong. He had gained weight in the last 10 years and whatnot. Just admit it and move on. It is what it is,
You can have a human reaction and they're like, and then be like, actually, that wasn't right. So, yeah, absolutely.
Just
Well,
own it
it,
and
yeah. Well, it absolutely was my pleasure to talk to you. The things I surmise from your very authentic Twitter account, turns out I've been right. You are that authentic in person. And so I've
Thank
been
you.
really looking forward to connecting with you. So follow the Village Crazy Lady on X. It's V. Is there an I in there? Yeah. Village.
Yeah,
There, it,
there's a
the
character
A is
limit. So
missing.
there's
Okay.
no A in Village. Yeah, but yeah. Usually, if you just type in Village Crazy Lady, it'll come up.
Yes.
So,
All
yeah.
right. Well, I'm glad
But
to be,
yes, thank you. Anytime. Thank
ideologically
you so
aligned with
much. I love
you.
you
And
guys.
yeah,
Yes.
ditto. Okay. Thank
Yeah.
you again for your time. It really was a
Bye.
pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for watching Redacted. We'd love for you to subscribe to the channel. It's totally free if you want to follow us or subscribe. And if we brought you any value at all, please consider sharing this video with a friend or a loved one on social media. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time.